Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. You'll find all the TWiT shows on your Roku box, Android, and BlackBerry phones, and all Yahoo Widget TVs powered by MediaFly. For more information, visit twit.tv/MediaFly. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 62 for September 29th, 2010. Pizza. 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 This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If you're in tech support, solve problems fast with the leader in remote support software, GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/TWiG. And by Carbonite.com. Backing up the files on your PC or Mac is safe and easy with Carbonite. For a free trial plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com. Offer code TWIG. And by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure, hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now, absolutely free, at MailRoute.info. It's time for TWiG, This Week in Google, the show that covers Google and, I must underscore, the cloud, cloud computing in general. We don't spend a lot of time talking about that because Google is swamping the news these days. They're just doing so much. Jeff Jarvis is here from his office at the City University of New York in New York. Hey, Jeff.
Hey there.
Good to see you. BuzzMachine.com and the author of the book, What Would Google Do? And also of a review in the Huffington Post that we will talk about in just a bit. Also with us, Gina Trapani from her office in San Diego, California. Hi, Gina.
Hey, how are you?
Gina blogs at smarterware.org and also is doing a really nice new series at Fast Company. In fact, we have to let Gina go in about an hour so she can go out and do more on her Work Smart series, fastcompany.com/worksmart.
Woohoo!
Thank you for being here. So, Gina, you're going to be a little left out of this conversation.
I haven't seen The Social Network yet. Everyone's seen it.
No, everyone has not. It doesn't even open till Friday. But
it feels like all my peers have seen it.
Yeah. Well, I went to a screening that Mashable did in the city because I felt like I had to see it as soon as possible because I know everybody's going to be talking about it. And I take it, Jeff, you saw a screening somewhere.
I used what little clout I have and went to Sony and said, get me in, please. And they did.
Why did you feel like you had to see it so early?
To talk about it on TWiG.
Thank you, Jeff. Me too. That's my story, and I'm sticking. No, I was just curious. Now, I have to say, I read the book by Ben Mezrich, Accidental Billionaires. We interviewed Ben and Dana Brunetti, who's one of the producers of the movie for Trigger Street, about a year ago when they started the movie. I had read the Aaron Sorkin script that was circulating on the internet and turns out to have actually been the actual script, very close to the shooting script. So I think I knew too much. Jeff, what did you think of the movie? You wrote about it in the Huffington Post.
I think it's the revenge on the revenge of the nerds. I was disappointed in it a lot because what I said in my review is that there was no why there. It didn't care about what Facebook is. It wanted to look at nitty-gritty of one relationship and gave no motive for why Mark Zuckerberg does what he does, which I think matters. So right. If he's so determined and dogged about doing what he does, well, why? Well, all they present really is that he either wants to get laid or wants to get into the exclusive club he couldn't get into. And that's as deep as they go, which I think is very, very shallow. And Sorkin has been quoted, you know, saying that he doesn't even use Facebook, doesn't care about it. He doesn't care about the facts. He wants to tell a story. Well, fine. Then you know, record it at Schmarvard, not Harvard.
Right.
You know, use somebody else. And so I think that it was very, very shallow. And I think what it was, in essence, was an attack on geeks and an attack on entrepreneurs.
Interesting.
And an attack on the people who are changing their world. And it's more of what I see every day and constantly of people who are being disrupted, who don't like it, who want to lash back. So what they want to do is demonize Google or Gates or now Zuckerberg. And that's what they, in essence, tried to do, I thought. The other characters were often cartoonish. The Winklevi, as Zuckerberg calls them, are properly cartoonish, as is Larry Summers, the
Is he a cartoon? President. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's Sorkin's populism getting away with him, wanting to make fun of rich people and intellectuals. And Eduardo Saverin is the victim in this. But in terms of harsh business terms, I think that maybe he just didn't fit as CEO. I met him once and, you know, nice guy, but he was trying to put tacky network ads on Facebook and Zuckerberg was trying to do something bigger. Sean Parker is presented as a drugged out party boy, and you'd think that Aaron Sorkin, given his history, would be a little more empathetic to him. And in the end, I think that what disturbed me was that it was trying to just attack us. It was trying to take those of us who see value in the internet and try to dismiss that value and dismiss one of its architects. And I think it was, in that sense, lazy. It didn't try to dig into what Zuckerberg truly is or why he does what he does, because it didn't understand what he has done.
The book was based on basically one person's story, Eduardo's story. And Ben Mezrich, who's written other books like this, fictionalizes conversations, fictionalizes action. What is left out of the movie is, and something that, by the way, Mark Zuckerberg was very, and his publicists were very quick to point out when Mark was on Oprah, is that Mark has a girlfriend, has had the same girlfriend since that time. So motive number one to get laid is bogus.
Right.
And in fact, the movie ends, I don't think I'm spoiling anything, with a very poignant scene about the missed opportunity with a girl that's not only has to be, not only is fictional, it has to be fictional because it's Mark had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
So a lot of what the movie says is the premise for Mark doing this is his jilting by this girl and is just phony.
Yeah. It's made up. In the discussion on Huffington Post, where I cross-posted the review, most people are saying to me, hey, it's not a documentary.
Well, it's not even true.
That's the problem. It's not even true. And it uses real names. I mean, Citizen Kane changed the name and went with that license there. You know, there's license taken. But as you say, Leo, it's not even true. And it goes so far in, I think, attacking him. A few people said that they thought that he came off well because they were kind of, you know, yay, the geek wins. But I don't think that's Sorkin's attitude at all.
It's interesting. I did not, in fact, you call it the anti-social movie. I did not, in fact, take it personally, as you seem to have. I just thought, to be honest, and David Denby in The New Yorker said, not only is this film brilliant, he said it's Aaron Sorkin's best script. I thought it was a crappy movie. Now, and I was kind of puzzled because everybody's been raving about this movie, including The New Yorker. And so what I thought is, oh, well, maybe I know too much.
Yeah, we know too much. We're too close.
Yeah. Maybe somebody coming in here, like my wife, who knows nothing except that there's such a thing as Facebook, and it's not even on, maybe she'll love the movie. But I think there's missing stuff. There's some structural things that I have a problem with. For instance, it intercuts between depositions and the action. Depositions, action. And you never get a chance to watch the story build. You never get involved in the story because you keep getting pulled back to a deposition. I have to say, I did not think it was as negative about Mark Zuckerberg as everybody's thought. Mark is painted as a cipher. You don't really know what's going on in his head. Jesse Eisenberg does a great job of kind of lip twitching. Like something's going on. There's something in there, but we don't know what.
Well, I think part of that, don't you think that he was, it was a rather... an effort to make him look rather Asperger-y.
Yeah, I think that if there was anything that you get that negative about Mark in here is that he is antisocial, is that he doesn't understand the rules. He can't understand, for instance, why a woman wouldn't like the notion of being compared to a farm animal. It's just like, but it was a joke. I don't, and so as a result, I think it's not negative. It just comes off that he's just clueless.
Well, but again, I think you're right, though. It's what it doesn't say about him. It doesn't get. And you know, I hardly know Mark Zuckerberg. I've been, you know, I've met him four or five times. But in just that alone, he's not
that bad.
No, he has charm. He tells jokes. He laughs. He smiles. He acts human. And that's the thing about his portrayal here by Sorkin and Eisenberg and the director is that he becomes rather unhuman, kind of a machine man.
So you think this is an indictment of all geeks, that we're all a little bit like that?
Yes, I think it's these damn geeks are taking over the world and they're screwing it up, and all they're enabling is for people to do trite stuff, right, and get drunk and get laid and look how they're ruining the world.
And they're fundamentally heartless.
Yes.
The geeks have no heart.
They have no soul.
No soul.
They don't know how to interact. And they're just exploiting us because they think that relationships are something to exploit.
It seems to be that in this movie that Zuckerberg is surrounded by this swirling world of people who don't understand what he's up to, don't understand what he's doing, and in many cases end up getting taken advantage of, but almost by not by omission, not commission. It doesn't really seem like Mark's doing anything. It's just happening. Like when Eduardo gets fired, it's Sean Parker who really is the heavy in that scene. And then Sean Parker, almost at the same time, gets busted for a coke and gets forced out.
In the story, though, it didn't happen that way. That was at the party for the site. It was actually somewhere else that it happened.
It was a party for their millionth user.
In the movie.
There's also the problem, which is always a problem with computer movies, is that there's nothing inherently dramatic about typing. and they do the best they can. You know, when he's actually creating Facebook for the first time, they interpose it with the blog postings, which is how that happened in the book as well. And that adds some drama. But, you know, there's this moment, which I think is supposed to be a pivotal scene in the movie when they go live.
Yes.
And it's like,
And that's like, oh, we took the password off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you press the button, you hit the command, and now it's live. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm of the opinion that this movie, if it were about schmobook.com or Harvard Connection, it would be terrible because it only succeeds because of what you bring to it, that you know about the Facebook. So the only thrill is, that's the Facebook that just went live.
Yeah.
Without that, it's like, boy, that was dramatic.
Right. I mean, the funny thing about all the deposition scenes is that only lawyering could make coding look interesting.
Oh, they're horrible. I have to say, I do not think this is a good movie. The more I think about it, the less impressed I am. And the only excuse I can think of for why people like David Denby, who I really respect, liked it, is because they're seeing it as a work of fiction. They don't really know the truth.
It sounds like I am going to hate this.
Well, I want you to see it, and I really want to hear what you think. I hope you won't be influenced
by
us.
Yeah, no, I do. I do want to see it. I mean, what stinks for Mark is that this is the story that people are just going to assume is mostly true.
Right.
You
Although
know, because
he's making this huge PR effort with $100 million to Newark, appearing on Oprah, that puff piece edited video, which starts with him kissing his real girlfriend.
Yeah.
And you know, Kara Swisher on Twitter said something interesting. She said, we tried to get Mark to come with us to the premiere. She said it would have been such an opportunity for him to say, well, it's an interesting movie, but it has nothing to do with what really happened, and to show himself not to be that person. And I guess he just really doesn't want to see it no matter what. But
on Oprah, he said, like, hey, it's a movie. It's fun. I mean, I know that my life isn't that dramatic. And, you know, but it's a good story. I mean, he did kind of say that. And, you know, he made the point to say that he didn't make that announcement on Oprah because the movie was opening. Oprah actually said that Mark wanted to make that Newark Schools contribution anonymously and that she had to egg him on to do it publicly. And I have to tell you, I kind of buy that. He's a shy nerd. I kind of buy that he wanted to make that contribution.
Well, then you're the only one, Gina. Because
I think it's very possible.
It's very possible, but nobody in the world believes that or thinks that. And we'll never, that isn't going to stick. You know, it's 3 days before the movie comes out. Come on.
And we now know that when I visited Zuckerberg to interview him for the next book, and I said on the show that there was this countdown clock and it's had 45 days. That was to this Friday.
Oh, it's to the movie. So they were very aware.
They're conscious of it, yeah.
You're kidding. That was the and they didn't tell you it was
No, okay, just they're going to release it. Maybe they're going to release things on Friday. That's fine. But it was after I was on the show and I said, I don't know what it is. God bless, as always, someone in the show will follow up, and they counted up on the calendar and they said, Dorky, it's October 1.
Wow, that's very interesting. Now, maybe they do have if they are doing a counter PR initiative, October 1 would be a very good day to make a big announcement that maybe could get some headlines.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a positive thing. Yes. What could they announce? A phone? I don't know. What could they announce?
They're not buying TechCrunch.
At this, right. We got a lot to talk. There's a lot of news to talk about. I did want to lead with this because it is opening on Friday.
I got one question for you, Leo.
Yeah.
The victims, besides, you know, Eduardo Saverin, his co-founder, was in the view of the movie, screwed out of some equity, his job and his status as co-founder, and fine. I think that, you know, there's some point to that. The other ones, of course, are the Winklevies, the Winklevoss twins, as Zuckerberg calls them. And as you know, everyone knows the story that this was their idea, supposedly, and he took it and ran. That's what strikes me as just most specious about the movie, because the idea at its genesis is fairly obvious. There's other things. The world is about execution. It's not about ideas. And I think this is kind of an old copyright mentality versus an entrepreneurial mentality, and that's part of what the movie also doesn't understand. So the Winklevi didn't, to my mind, get screwed, and they got a $65 million settlement reportedly, though they're now trying to go back for more. And in a different world, they would be the villains and the
idiots. They should be the villains. There is a moment in the movie where Mark there's quite an impassioned speech in one of these depositions. It's actually the best speech in the movie.
Yes.
Where Mark says, you know, these guys, I wish I could remember it, but it essentially says, I'm the smartest guy in the room. If you think these guys could come up with the Facebook, and he does point to, he says, Friendster, there was another
example. Social networking already existed.
It already existed.
Up one. Yeah. I mean, it way before 2004.
Right.
I had this argument this week. It was like, no, these guys don't. Social networking existed. He executed. He got the users. There were plenty of other sites that did the same thing. Profiles, friends.
And I think it's in the trailer, that a piece of that speech where he says, if they could have invented the Facebook, why didn't they? Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's absolutely true. So it may, in some sense, maybe there is some defense of Mark and against the Winklevi. They don't come off that good, I got to say.
Nobody
in this movie comes off very well.
That's the other thing. You know, there is no hero. It's all dark. It's this whole world of the geek and the entrepreneur and the rich is presented as a dark, depressing, inhuman, unpleasant, nasty world.
And I've always thought Aaron Sorkin was pretty good with his female characters. Ooh. Women in this movie are not treated well.
Oh, I'm going to hate this movie. I'm definitely going to hate this movie. And the Ivy League, I would like to point out. And the Ivy League.
Oh, the Ivy League is even worse. We don't sue. We're men of Harvard, says the Winklevoss at one point. And then Larry Summers, he had some despicable lines. He comes off as the most pompous buffoon. Comedic. At one point, he says to his assistant who's sitting in the room, Louise, punch me in the face. I'm about to fall asleep here.
Well, but Gina,
he's practically Thurston Howell III in this movie.
Oh, he is. Yeah, and that's the most made-up scene in a sense of all, except for the girlfriend stuff. They had no way in that.
Yeah.
But Gina, I'd be curious whether you think that the way that women come off badly is because Sorkin is not treating it well, or because that's part of his indictment of the geeks.
That they mistreat women.
Yeah.
The women in this, there's one sympathetic lawyer. Every other woman in this is a bimbo, a slut, somebody who's out to meet a rich Harvard fellow.
Oh, right. Boy.
A groupie. I think it's actually a pretty reprehensible movie.
You're getting madder as we go.
I am, now that I think about it.
It just lost a star.
Another star off. I love Aaron Sorkin. I love David Fincher, although Fincher's not exactly kind to women either. But I think he's a great filmmaker. I think something went badly wrong with this. And maybe it is polemic. Maybe you're right, Jeff. This is anti-geek polemic.
I don't think, looking at the comments on HuffPost, I don't think that's the way. And then, granted, that's people who are online. You know, they should be closer to this view. But I think that's the way it's going to go. I think that there is a hostility to not just Facebook, but also to the change these people have brought us.
Well, I'm hostile to Facebook. So I was, I guess, the natural, but I'm not hostile to geeks. I don't know. I mean, it's very true to the book, by the way. I mean, if you're going to bring the book to life, I guess.
Which is not true to life, but that's okay.
Right. Yeah, Ben does not write. He writes fictionalized history.
What's the box office prediction?
I think that despite all the great reviews, this is going to tank. Because I think fundamentally most people, even if they're on, well, the first 2 weekends will be strong. I think it'll die very quickly after because I think word of mouth will be bad. I think people will go because they're on Facebook because there's 500 million users. And the promotion for this has been phenomenal. But I think ultimately it's not a good movie. And I think people are going to come out of it scratching their heads.
Go ahead, Gina.
I was going to say, I mean, I think that, you know, there's so many Facebook users and then there's some media coverage about Facebook's privacy settings and all the things that, you know, all the ways that Facebook is potentially evil. So I think there are people who are just like, I want to know more about this. You know, what really happened? How did this happen? And then they're going
to
believe that the story is mostly
right.
I mean,
well, and that's why I think some people, I think it may have more appeal than it does to me because I know the story. If you didn't know the story, it might be very dramatic. You know, oh, they flipped the switch. Yeah. How's it? How? Ooh, you think anybody will use it? Will they make any money? You know.
They're at Brown University now? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, they're spreading.
You know, I just a little bit of self-promotion. I launched the ThinkUp beta this week, the first beta. So it's kind of like some level of stability, good installer, all this stuff. And so I was talking to my mom and she was like, how's it going? And I was like, well, I launched this new product. And she was kind of like, what does that mean? And I said, well, I write a blog post that says that this thing is now available. And she's like, and I was like, right. And then you just kind of wait and see what happens. And I've got this really cool chart that shows you that people looked at it.
Well, they actually did miss a they didn't miss a bet where they could have shown the numbers going up. You know,
they could have.
They missed some obvious opportunities.
But these guys don't know. They're not geeks. I mean, Sorkin doesn't use Facebook. The lead, I don't know what his name is. The lead guy who plays Zuck says that he doesn't use Facebook. I feel like there's a lot of people who, you know, just don't use the product and don't have a good sense of it. Maybe that's a good thing, but I think in a lot of ways it's a bad thing.
I don't think so. I think it's intellectually dishonest of them. I mean, you're going to try to present some vision of this world and its creator, and you purposely choose not to understand what he's done. That shows the greatest disrespect of all for the creation of geeks and entrepreneurs and all of Silicon Valley. And that's what Mark Harris in New York Magazine, in his profile of Sorkin on this, said that this was a well-aimed spitball at new media by old media.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think he's right to an extent. I think that there's something to that. But I said it wasn't from new media. It was from neo-new media. I think we see the creation of what I called a young curmudgeons club.
Yeah.
Which is now Sorkin, Nick Carr. I think that Chris Anderson from Wired now deserves membership for killing the web.
I love this.
Gladwell.
Gladwell, right.
We're going to talk about his New Yorker article. Yep.
Rowan, the editor of Wired UK, who talked about proudly why he never uses Facebook in his position, is just absurd. Evgeny Morozov. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on and on of these people who I think aren't so much old media. I think resist the change brought on. The Young Curmudgeons Club doesn't want to give the internet credit for the change.
My daughter says that there's a hipster anti-internet movement going on, that people even her age, these hipsters, it's cool to be, oh, I don't do that.
Didn't Miley Cyrus kind of start that there for a while?
She did, didn't she?
Like,
I don't know if I'd call her a hipster.
No, I wouldn't call her a hipster either. But I definitely, right, there's this kind of group of young people who say like, oh, like I'm not going to waste my time like that. Yeah. I'm going to, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, go outside.
I had, you know, and it's really true. I mean, you know, a lot of times a movie's made to make money, and that's what they're saying in the chat room. But not, Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher are almost always write movies that are political, that make a strong political point.
Yes.
And so I think that it's completely fair for you to ascribe a motive to them that is anti Facebook and anti geek. I think that's completely fair. Yeah.
It's interesting. As I said, it's the revenge on the revenge of the nerds.
Yeah. Wow.
We're going to take. I'm going to bet by Friday we're going to have people, our listeners, who are going to be coming in and screaming at least me. We'll see.
I didn't put it in writing. I'm going to wait, but I think I will write. I think I should write a review of it because I hate to write a review before the movie comes out because I don't want to poison people's point of view. I'd like to hear what.
Yeah,
people
I was
think.
The same way, except that
you're a real journalist.
It opened in the New York Film Festival on Friday, right. So the reviews were in all the major press. And I hate being left that far behind. And I wanted to get it up before this the show. So that's why I did it.
No, it's appropriate for you to do it. You come from an actual reviewer background. I'm just some schlub.
Somebody at Huffington Post said, oh, well, this from a TV critic.
Yeah. What do Sorkin you know about there. Film?
Sorkin was there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Aaron. I mean, I got to say, I love Fight Club. I love West Wing. I was prepared to love this movie.
Studio 60?
Studio 60 was my favorite show of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'm in TV, remember? Yeah, but see, yeah, that was okay. A love letter. There's a really interesting. That was a love letter to TV.
To media. Yeah, you're right. Old media.
That's why I liked it. It was a total love letter to old media.
I looked up Sorkin at the time. Bloggers went after the show like crazy. And I looked up and Sorkin at the time smashed Bloggers in the Chicago Tribune and said that all voices oughtn't to be equal.
Wait a minute. In Studio 60, there's a very big moment where one of the actors is very influenced by a blogger.
That's right.
And the script, that's some jerk in a pajamas. In fact, it's a big plot point in one of the episodes, come to think of it.
Yeah, that's right.
His true color's coming out.
Yeah, he doesn't. So this is he's got the archive here of the disdain for this technology created world.
Very interesting. You're watching This Week in Google Day. Jeff Jarvis is here from BuzzMachine.com, which I think is down a little bit right now.
I think it's up again now. Okay, I was just panicking over that and was going to ask Gina to reboot me.
It's probably our fault. We probably sent a few people there to read your review. Gina Trapani is also here. Her site never goes down. SmarterWare.org. Not for lack of hints, just because it's a robust. Actually, I think we brought it down once, didn't we?
You did bring it down once.
We did.
We're good at that. The Twin Army is powerful.
It is.
But I don't want the Twit Army to say, "Oh, we're not going to go see that movie," because we want to know what you think.
Oh, no, we definitely want to hear what you think. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I don't want to scare people away from this. Hey, it's time to talk a little bit about our friends at Citrix and the great product that I use to help friends and family. It's called GoToAssist, and I have the wrong one up here, so let me put the right one up here. If you go to GoToAssist.com, right there, /Twig. You can try this free for 30 days. In fact, this would be a good time if you've collected support tickets from Grandma, Aunt Jean, Uncle Fred, Brother Phil, and you've got a lot of support to do. Go to assist.com. Get the 30-day trial. Just go support them all. It'll cost you nothing. GoToAssist is based on the great remote access capabilities that Citrix is so famous for with GoToMeeting and GoToMyPC. But it's designed for the support professional, the truth is. Somebody who needs to fix people's computers without walking down the hall or traveling across the country to do so. And certainly doesn't want to spend time on the phone with phone support. If you have people calling you up and you want to fix some systems, if you're in IT or if you're a software support, this is such a great solution. First of all, Mac or PC, so it's completely cross-platform. You can support a Mac from a PC and vice versa. It allows you to drag and drop files from your computer to their supported computer so you can bring patches or fixes or malware bytes over. It allows you to see what's going on in that system, what operating system, what background software, what security software is running. It even allows you to do unattended support up to 8 sessions at once. So you can start an install, start a scan, start a fix, and move on. Makes you much more efficient. Makes you a support hero. Recently named the worldwide market leader in remote support by Frost & Sullivan, which is an analyst group that specializes in this category. It's the number one remote support solution worldwide. Easy to use, affordable, secure, and yours free for the next 30 days. Go to GoToAssist.com/twig and try it today. Thank them so much for their support. Of This Week in Google. All right, enough movie reviews. I don't want to bore our lovely audience. They haven't seen the movie yet, but I do think it's germane because of this anti-geek bias, which I really, frankly, did not pick up on initially.
Maybe I'm just more sensitive, Leo.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Now that I think about it, it was something bugged me about. I knew I didn't like the movie, and now I realize it's because it was trashing my people. Don't trash my people, man. So the federal government, we talked about this on Security Now today. I'd like to get your opinions on this one. The federal government is back. The FBI, once again, wants internet encryption providers, people like Skype, people like Google, people who provide encryption solutions, to have a government-available backdoor so that should they get a subpoena, they can tell the government what really happened. The Obama administration asked for this law. They say they will pursue it next year. And already the EFF and many groups who are promoting freedom on the net are up in arms over this one. Any thought?
That's a terrible idea.
Thank you very much. We've seen it before.
It's a terrible idea.
And the courts have ruled against it. You know, they say it violates First Amendment rights and it violates our ability to pursue privacy.
Yeah, it's like we're going to encrypt this thing, but we have this back door for someone who has the rights to see it. You know, just the government, just in case.
Just us, I mean, just in case. Don't worry. You could trust us.
Yeah, you could trust us. It's just a little back door. Yeah. Don't worry about it. We're good.
I understand the FBI's frustration because they used to be able to tap any phone. And now, if you're a bad guy, Garry Kasparov, who's former chess champion of the world, told Amber this in an interview. He said when he's dealing with the Russian, because he was kind of a dissident. He ran for president in Russia. And he said, I use Skype because I know that my calls cannot be monitored by the Russian government.
Oh.
You know, I think what happened is the U.S. government looked at Dubai saying, hey, BlackBerry, you got to unencrypt. And BlackBerry said, okay. Looked at India, said, BlackBerry, we can't read these messages. You got to give us the keys. And BlackBerry said, okay. And they said, hey, we want that too. We don't want just wanted from RIM. We want it from everybody.
I'll get in trouble for this, but I'm conflicted here. I agree with you. Let me say, make this clear in the bottom line. I think it's a bad idea. I think it's the wrong thing. But I also go back to my, you know, post 9/11 victim war blogging days. And I want government enabled indeed to catch and stop terrorists. So I believe in that. But then I find this scary and abhorrent. And so my problem is, I don't know where the line properly is. I can't draw that line.
I'll give you some ammunition, Jeff. All of this encryption already exists and cannot be pulled back. So if a bad guy wishes to use encryption that's strong that the government doesn't have a backdoor to, they can. If you are writing products outside the U.S., you make them strong. So the bad guys aren't thwarted by this. What it really happens is you and me don't have secure conversations anymore. If you're a terrorist, either you're not using encryption at all, or if you're sophisticated enough to be using encryption, you just take the extra trouble to use PGP or something that's going to work that the government can't break. Period.
And there'll be ways around. I think you're right. So it's already there anyway. So
the horse has left the barn.
Have mainstream services used by mainstream people, you open up. Thank you, Leo. I needed that.
I knew you need some ammunition. I just thought I'd give you two.
The other part of, I think, this piece of legislation is the notion of a blacklist, too, which scares me even more. Yeah. That for government to be able to shut down
can't
a site.
Can't use that. Can't blind that. This is a second one. This is an anti-piracy thing The DNS would be modified. Blacklist sites that are violating copyright. And this one is really reprehensible.
That's truly disgusting.
Yeah. It would put make us a second class citizen instantly in the world, the internet world. It would again be ineffective. It's basically censorship. It's website blacklists are essentially censorship. And somebody pointed out, if this law had been in effect at the turn of the century, piano rolls would not have been invented. VCR would not have been invented. Many technologies that have changed the world for the good wouldn't be here because current copyright holders would use tools like this to prevent them from succeeding. It's the Combating Online Infringement and Counterfeits Act, which is actually not a good acronym, COICA. It would allow the Attorney General and the Department of Justice to break the internet, according to the EFF, one domain at a time by requiring internet service providers, domain registrars, DNS providers, and others to block internet users from reaching certain websites. Chillingly, the law also allows the Justice Department to create a blacklist of sites, quote, dedicated to infringing activities that ISPs and others would be encouraged to block. So somebody comes along and says, you know, this Twig show, they keep putting clips from The Daily Show in. We really would like to encourage you to keep your users from seeing it. And it's done. You can't get to us. We'd have to hand out the IP address on street corners. Enter this number. We're still here. You just can't find us. All right. Just thought I'd bring up those two exciting things. Let's see. Did any of you get the Google China warning? We talked about this on Twit this week. I think it was Veronica Belmont who buzzed. This red warning from Google to Gmail users, not everybody. Warning, we believe your account was recently accessed from China. The idea being, I guess, to let you know that Chinese hackers had been trying to get into your account or getting into your account.
The way that's worded, though, could also mean you have a cousin there.
Right. In fact,
yeah. Right. This is a Gmail feature where it lets you know if two people. So, you know, at the bottom of your Gmail, it tells you if you're logged in someplace else and what the IP address is. They do some sort of, they check to see, you know, where that other location is. And if you're logged in from two very different locations or from very far away, if there's unusual activity, it alerts you, which is a fantastic feature. So that's what it seems like this red message is about. I mean, this isn't specific to Chinese hackers, right? This is just the Gmail feature kind of in action. But why did this get triggered?
Well, that's what's weird. It is that feature, but it's particularly highlighting China.
Yeah. So several people have had this.
Yeah.
From China.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah. And only China. And in a big red banner, not a thing at the bottom of the page. I guess you do. You would get an alert, don't you, if somebody's been doing that. I think I got the alert once.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is related to that or this is something special that Google's doing just because they don't like China. I don't know.
So Veronica got this. What did she do? Did she like instantly change her?
I don't think she got it. I think somebody emailed her saying I got it.
Oh, I see.
And a number of people have tweeted it.
That's wacky. I would change all of my passwords instantaneously.
Yeah, and that's what Google's advice is. I think that's actually not a bad thing, but I don't know if they should just focus on China. pick some. Although most hacking does seem to come from China. When I look at my logs, and there are people trying to break SSH. It's almost always brute force attacks from Chinese IP addresses.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's a hacker finds it easy to compromise a Chinese machine to use it as a route, and maybe the guy's sitting next door, I don't know. Or, I mean, right?
Right, it's true.
Right.
You don't trust the IP address. That's meaningless. Unless it's some guy at a Chinese university who couldn't care less if you know it's him.
Right.
All right, AOL buys... not one, not two, but three new properties. They buy 5min, which is a video property that has 5-minute clips. They say hundreds of thousands of them. They buy Brizly. Actually, they buy the parent company of Brizly.
Right.
Which is, isn't it ex-Googlers? I think it is.
Yeah, it's Jason Schellen's Ving Labs. Jason Schellen worked on Blogger.
Good guy.
Yeah, very good guy. Jason's great.
Well, good for him because, frankly, with a new Twitter, I think it was about time to sell.
Yeah.
Plus, as I remember, Jason was going to go to some other company and then something kind of went awry. And then he started this and God bless him, it worked.
He also worked on Reader, right? It says
Yes, he did.
Reader. Google Reader. So,
I think it was at Supernova. Jeff, you and I were at this. I think the one of the kind of head guys at AOL was on stage and said, you know, I noticed most of you are using TweetDeck. Yeah, I could tell that he was
looking.
He was looking to see what people were using and definitely interested in sort of a tweet stream or a post social media kind of client. So the Brizly acquisition doesn't surprise me.
Brizly's kind of interesting because it is web-based. It's a client, but it's not a standalone client. It's just a web page. And I have to say, with the new, I added Foursquare, it has Facebook, it has other things besides just your single Twitter account. So I guess it has some utility beyond what the new Twitter page does. But it looked like the new Twitter page kind of made Brizly a little less attractive. I use Brizly, and I stopped because I like the new Twitter page.
Well, the irony to me is it also goes back to the ICQ roots that I like saying about AOL, and it's not Tim Armstrong's fault. He's trying to fix this now. But AOL asked what business they were in and came up with the wrong answer. They said, we're in showbiz and we'll merge with Time Warner. And the truth is that they were Facebook and Twitter before, you know, while Mark Zuckerberg was still learning to eat.
Hmm.
They had all the tools necessary to enable this kind of communication. And they understood chat. They understood people coming together to communicate. They understood content creation. And they ignored all of that and thought they were, you know, in the dial-up business.
They blew it, for sure.
Oops. According to Read Write Web, the team is not Brizly will not survive, or isn't particularly the reason they bought it. They wanted the team, the engineers, the brains to work on AOL's social stream product, LifeStream. Have you used LifeStream?
No.
No.
Apparently nobody else has.
Yeah, I do remember that AOL person mentioning LifeStream, and everyone was kind of like, what?
Huh? What? It's iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC, all your social network updates in one place. It's been around for over a year. About 5 million people use it, which is nothing. But I might use it now. I got to look at it. I tell you, it looks it combines all these things. I'm going to look at it.
How many of these are there now?
I'm sorry, Gina, what did you say?
No, I was saying, like, how many of these? I said this TweetDeck and Seismic. I mean, the all-in-one kind of social media client seems to be a very popular product.
Hootsuite's got an enterprise focus. We're going to start using it for multiple tweeters on one account, which is that's a good business. Anyway,
Hootsuite's good at that, too.
Yes, there are a couple of these.
Yep.
But the big acquisition is TechCrunch. When GigaOm published this story, I thought, oh, this is just wishful thinking from Om Malik. I thought, that can't possibly. And it happened. Mike Arrington invited an AOL executive on stage at Disrupt and said, In fact, I think he signed the papers.
Yes.
Didn't he give the audience the opportunity to veto, but to boo the deal? And they didn't.
I think it was a $40 million deal that Mike was not going to scotch no matter what the audience had to say. That's the rumor. Anywhere from $25 to $40 million for TechCrunch. And I presume it all mostly going to the pocket of Mike Arrington. You got to wonder, though, there was a great Joy of Tech geek culture cartoon, which an executive at AOL is going, how soon before I can get rid of this guy? He's driving me crazy. Mike said, this will not affect our, this will affect our coverage of AOL. We won't be able to write any positive AOL stories anymore. It's a nice spin on it.
AOL acquired Weblogs Inc. and Engadget.
That's right. They run Engadget. Yep.
And Engadget is still really good.
You'd barely know it was an AOL property.
Jason sold out way too soon, huh?
Oh, Jason. Jason is not happy. We're talking about Jason Calacanis, who's been tweeting basically death threats ever since this happened. I've never seen anybody quite...
Probably because they split up their event business, I think, so that Arrington could sell this nice and cleanly.
Right.
And so, he tweeted to Arrington, you want my bank transfer numbers.
Sorry, Jason.
Hey, it's business. Hey, Mr. Saverin, it's business.
Yeah. Boy, that is one reason to see this movie. The way they get Eduardo Saverin out of Facebook... It kind of rang true for me. I could see that happening.
Yeah.
You know?
That part, yeah.
Yeah. I guess Mike and Calacanis used to do TechCrunch 50, TC50. They had a kind of public blow up. In fact, I talked to Jason shortly after that. He said, Mike just disappeared. I had to finish Mike just disappeared. And he's been calling Mike.
That's the funny thing, though, Leo. It's so redundant to use those two names and say blow up.
Of course. These two are three-week circus.
He even made me, the nicest person on the internet, blow up.
Yes. He did. Yes. He found Leo's fuse.
He lit my fuse. In fact, both of them have kind of pissed me off.
Yeah.
And I decided I'm not working with people who make me angry anymore. It's just bad for my blood pressure. And the two of them are peas in a pod in that respect. They both really can get you going.
Yeah.
And I have, here's the funny thing. I have a lot of respect for both of them. They're
and
smart.
I'm very glad for Arrington. I think that he, I was talking to my students this week, and Rafat Ali was coming into my class, and I said he was the journalist who became the accidental entrepreneur, and Arrington was the entrepreneur who became the accidental journalist. And he, went through his rough periods and was very Arrington, but by God, he built an amazing thing.
Everybody reads it. Everybody reads it. You have to read it.
You bet. And his event that I went to was really good. And he can be difficult, but that's probably why he is where he is. And he did, good for you, Mike.
Big stars always have big egos. I mean, it's just the way it is sometimes. And
when Sorkin makes the movie about TechCrunch,
Oh, now see, that's a movie I'd go see.
Yes.
I don't know Perez Hilton, but I can imagine he might have a little bit of a emotional, temperature.
I think the Perez movie would be great.
That I'd see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Perez is a character, though. I mean,
does this change how TechCrunch covers the news?
I don't think it has to. I mean, I think, Engadget, like I said, is still good. I think that, I don't know. I think Arrington will go so far out of his way to prove that it won't.
Yeah, maybe. As long as Mike's there, he's going to be throwing spitwads at AOL.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I give him that. I give him credit for that.
He has to, though, at this point. He can't not.
Yeah.
We have another big story, a couple of big stories that we're going to get to. Amazon's kind of going gunning for Android in the marketplace. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. We are talking about Google in the cloud, and then this week on Google with Gina and Jeff and me and Carbonite. Carbonite is my favorite backup solution. Everybody ought to know about Carbonite. It is online backup done right. And why do you need online off-site backup? Well, it's absolutely critical to any backup solution is the ability to back up away from where the originals are so that if the worst happens, fire, flood, tornado, earthquake, or just bad guys breaking in, that your data is somewhere else safe, off-site. You got to have it. I think any good backup also should be automatic because who remembers, oh, I got to back up on Sunday. No, it should happen all the time. So that's what happens. Carbonite. Runs on a PC or Mac, runs in the background. It's, by the way, very transparent. In fact, the new Carbonite 4 on Windows, it's so lightweight. You don't know what's there. But whenever you're online and not doing anything, it's going, here's some more data. It uses your broadband connection to upload using 128-bit SSL, so you can even do it at an open access spot, to the Carbonite servers where it is, of course, multiple backups there as well. You can also encrypt it, AES-256, which the government has no back door to. By the way, and you, in fact, are the only person with the key. That's also possible. So you can have absolute privacy of your data. But whenever you need it back, whether it's for fire, flood, or human error, I trashed that file. You just go online. And this is the neatest thing about the Carbonite. You can go online on any computer, and there's your data. So you don't have to install Carbonite on that machine. You don't have to do anything. That data is there. It's always available on any computer. They even have a free iPhone app and a BlackBerry app. Same thing. You can always get your data, check it to make sure it's there. This is what you should have for backup. I want you to try it free for 2 weeks. You don't even need a credit card. Just go to Carbonite.com and enter the offer code TWIG, T-W-I-G. Please use TWIG. I know people a lot of times forget and they use TWIT because that's, we're all TWIT. No. Please use Twig, because otherwise Carbonite's going to say, nobody listens to that Twig show. Carbonite.com, offer code Twig, 2 weeks free. And by the way, if you do like it and you say, I think I'm going to buy this, use Twig when you check out and you'll get 2 months free. It's less than $55 a year for every bit of data, all that personal stuff on your internal drive. That's a good deal. Carbonite.com, it's backup done right. Amazon says we are going to launch our own app store from Android. The story from TechCrunch this week.
Pretty interesting. It's like they're going to launch like the Apple iTunes, the curated version, right, of the Android market.
It's something we've been asking for, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing for Android, isn't it?
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. There are some extra restrictions on developers, but developers have a choice of where they want to list their app. So, hey, if it does well, I guess my question is, what is going to be like the consumer? Why is a consumer going to use the Android or the Amazon market over the Android market? I mean, I guess if they're on Amazon already or...
Well, I'll use it if I feel like it's vetted. I mean, we all complain about the fact that there's 1,800 wallpaper apps. You do a search on the Android marketplace... It's hard to find what you're looking for because there's so much crap. And a lot of the developers use popular names. Like if you search for Angry Birds, you'll find 20 things that aren't Angry Birds.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And the other problem that Amazon can solve is the payment problem. There are certain, the Android marketplace doesn't take certain credit cards. It doesn't take Amex. If you're buying, an international app, there's like restrictions. So I wonder if Amazon will be able to let you buy apps maybe that are more difficult to buy. I tried to buy something recently. I forget now. I think Tasker, and I had my Amex set up, and it doesn't take American Express. So I had to set up another credit card, and I said, "Oh, screw it! I'm not gonna go through all this right now."
Although the Google payment, which is the normal means in the marketplace, works fine if you have a Google account,
right?
Yeah. I don't know. I got to figure out why that's not set up because I definitely have one of those Google.
It might
checkout.
Be international. It's not international.
Tasker's an international app.
That's
so
why.
That was why. It. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
for each now, and this I think, and TechCrunch mentions this. I think it does kind of imply that Amazon's going to do an Android-based tablet. So it would make a lot of sense if you're making the hardware. That's why Verizon's doing the VCast Android store, because they're selling the hardware. So it makes sense to have a kind of, it's on this Droid X. There's, you go to the standard market application, and there is a Verizon tab, a vetted.
Oh, so it's a, I see. So it's a separate tab. In this case,
it's a separate tab. So, in fact, it takes the place of, on a stock Android install, of the downloads tab, which is kind of annoying. That's hidden in the menu. You hit the Verizon tab. It's not just Verizon apps. Skype's in there. I mean, it's approved apps, right? Bing is in there. Most of them are from Verizon, but not Bust a Move, not Rhapsody. So these are things that Verizon has presumably vetted. Here's Kindle for Android.
Whom would you trust more to curate quality apps, Verizon or Amazon?
Amazon, right?
Yeah.
Now, according to TechCrunch, Amazon's going to take a chunk. They will pay a royalty equal to the greater of 70% of the purchase price or 20% of the list price of the purchase date. I guess the list price is you could have a list price on other app stores and then have a discounted price on Amazon. I guess
similar
that's
to
the
books.
Point. Yeah. There's a $99 developer fee. So I don't know why you would pay that. I guess because you want to be in the store, right?
You just want to be in the store, yeah. So that puts up that just that little barrier that's like you've got to be serious about
that's
wanting
true.
To.
That eliminates the wallpapers.
Spam. Yeah. It eliminates the wallpapers, exactly.
Yeah. It says, and this is, I hope, not true, that there's going to be DRM on it.
Oh.
Well, perhaps. Yeah, so they'll only work on devices they approve.
I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case, too.
That's crappy.
And there's this other caveat that if your app is available on other platforms, you have to make sure to update it at the same time on Amazon store that you do in any other store. It's fair. I just don't know how easy that will be for if there's an approval process. Oh, I guess if there's an approval process on Amazon side, but if everyone's got a store and you've got to submit your app to all the different places and wait for approval.
Oh, that's to encourage you to use maybe just the marketplace in Amazon, not do a VCast marketplace Amazon. That's probably what that is. Yeah.
Maybe.
Free apps are allowed. That's interesting. And it's U.S. only. Amazon says, we have the sole discretion to determine all features and operations of this program and to set the retail price and other terms on which we sell apps. So this is like books. They're saying, we'll tell you what to charge.
Oh.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Well, the other rumor TechCrunch had was of an Amazon tablet.
Yeah. So that makes sense, right? Tablet and store should go together.
Right.
That does make sense.
I guess Amazon's emboldened by the success of the Kindle. I never could understand why they wanted to be in the hardware business.
You sell an Android tablet with the Kindle app installed on it, right. Where you can purchase books. It's just a way more tricked out Kindle. You want the Kindle with the touchscreen and the color? Here, right. Get the Android tablet,
Have we talked about that great Kindle ad where the guy sits next to the beautiful woman?
I love that ad. I feel like they nailed the two things that the Kindle does better so well, the e-ink and the price,
right.
So well.
Yes, I can read it in the sun, and it's $130. And you're never getting to date me, big boy. Go away with your shiny iPad.
I paid more for my sunglasses.
Yes!
I just love that line. It's so perfectly done.
It kind of says it all, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, Schmidt, when he talked to TechCrunch this week, I think positioned the war in a new way as edge versus edge. That's to say that he said, oh, the device doesn't matter. The device is dumb. The device is meaningless. It's the cloud that matters. And of course, Apple says, oh, the cloud, big deal. Everybody has a cloud. We have the devices.
Right.
And Amazon is in an interesting position where they're kind of trying to play both now.
Right. We are the cloud.
Yeah.
And we make the hardware.
Right.
Google TV makes an early public appearance. This is the Sony TV. They're going to make an announcement in a couple of days, but apparently, according to, is this Engadget? Yep, Engadget. It showed up at a Best Buy, at the press event at the Best Buy in New York. It's an NSX 46 GT1 model. And it has, I'll show you, it has little apps at the bottom of it. I see TNT, YouTube, and Farmville. Just what I want. Farmville on my TV.
America productivity goes right down.
Farmville, really? Really? Oh, dear. Well, I guess you can't stop. Yeah, well, here's CNN, TBS. So, you know, I thought it was very interesting that Hulu Plus is going to show up on the new Roku box.
Yeah.
I think these boxes are, you know, this is going to give Google TV and Apple TV a run for its money now.
Yeah, heating up. Yep. Things are heating up.
Yeah,
for sure.
I like that. Competition, good thing.
Yep,
my Apple TV is in Alaska.
What?
My Apple TV is in Alaska.
And why?
That's right, you ordered one.
Oh, it's in Alaska, coming to you. It didn't go to Alaska. It's on its way. Yeah, I ordered one too, although I ordered it later, so I don't get it for a while. I'd be very curious. I don't like the idea of a streaming-only device, although I use the Roku like crazy. So there, I guess I do like that idea. All right, we're going to take another break and come back with our, because we got to let you go to work, Gina.
She's
going to work smart.
Right. No more of this hanging out.
No more hanging out. We're going to get Gina's tip. We're going to get Jeff's number. And I have a tool of the week, which I tried and was not impressed by. But I'm going to tell you about it anyway. It's overpriced and it didn't work. But other than that, it's great.
Just like the movie. No.
And don't go see that sucky antisocial movie. The Antisocial Network. Let's talk a little bit. This actually is a new sponsor, and it's kind of a little different thing for us. This guy's a friend of mine. His name is Tom Johnson. I met him 6 years ago, and he wrote what eventually became Microsoft's hosted exchange services. It was a company called FrontBridge, sold it to Microsoft. Kind of, you know, said, I'm going to relax a little bit now. But he said, spam is such a nasty thing. I'm going to write the ultimate spam solution. And now this is not a client-side solution. This is not an application. This is really not for an individual. Most of us are using Gmail. Gmail does a very credible job at spam. This is for either a company that wants to host its own mail, doesn't want to trust its mail to Gmail or some outside service, wants to run its own mail servers, or, and I think that a lot of us are in this category, I am, people who have their own servers. I use leoville.com. I know, Gina, you have your own servers. Kay Shep has his own servers. I've been using MailRoute on my leoville.com for 6 years. And Tom, every once in a while, will send me my stats. In the last 12 months, now, this is what's cool about MailRoute. If you go to mailroute.info, by the way, you can sign up 10% discount for life. If you just, you know, you don't even have to use our name or anything. Just go to mailroute.info. That's a special page for Twig listeners. And but again, you have to be able to change your MX record. That's how it works. But the nice thing is it takes 3 seconds. So if you were running your own server or you're an IT department or whatever, you change your MX record. So the mail, instead of coming to your server first, it goes to your leoville.com. The MX record says, no, send that to MailRoute. Goes to MailRoute. I think of it as sewage treatment plant. It gets rid of all the garbage and then comes back to my server. Let me tell you how many messages did not go through my server because of this. Last 12 months, I was sent 3,793,738 messages in one year. Of the 3.7 million messages I was sent, 3.6 million were spam. 96.5% of the traffic that went to leoville.com never arrived because of MailRoute. And by the way, zero false positives. Tom is a stickler for this. You don't miss any critical mail. You just don't get the junk. Last month, out of 342,000 messages sent to my Leoville account, 96.8% were spam. And I never saw it. I want you to try MailRoute right now. Just go to mailroute.info to find out more. If you sign up there, you'll get 10% off for life. 99.999% uptime for message processing. And that's nice because even if your server goes down, Leoville goes down all the time, I crash it. I don't lose any mail because they do something called mailbagging. They spool it out. They hold on to it. And when my server comes back, they slowly send the mail on. So I never miss any mail. It's really easy to set up. As long as you can change the MX record, you could be running within minutes. You could sign up right on the website. and no long-term contract. Prices start as low as $2 per user per month. The more users, more seats, the more, you know, boxes you have, the cheaper it gets. Outbound services can be added for an additional 50 cents per user per month. So you don't have to worry about your own mail getting black-holed. And it's month to month. There's no long-term contract. Tom says, we don't lock you in because we know you're going to want to stay here for life. I've been with him for 6 years, and I am just so happy with MailRoute. If you need to run your own mail servers, if you want privacy, if you run servers for family and friends, that's what I do. MailRoute.info. Do you run your own mail servers, Gina, ever? You use Gmail for everything.
No, I don't. I use Gmail for everything.
This is not for you, because if you use Gmail, you're very happy with the spam filtering. I think MailRoute's better. But it actually, what happens for my mail is it ends up at Gmail now. I used to use Fastmail. Goes to Gmail now. So I really don't see spam. Because everything is, you know, double filtered.
That's amazing. Those numbers are astounding.
Can you believe that? 96.8% of my email is spam.
It's crazy.
I mean, real spam. I mean, if you look at my, I should show you my mail store. I mean, it's, and never a false positive. MailRoute.info. Tom Johnston. Johnston is the nicest guy in the world. I love him. Old friend. He'll treat you right. MailRoute.
I'm getting nostalgia for John. I get no spam, Deborah.
I know. You know, every time he said that, I just, because I actually had I had a good solution. I should have been telling you about this for years. I apologize for not telling you about this before. MailRoute.info. All right, time for Gina's tip of the week. Gina?
This is actually for Gmail users. One of the things that defines Gmail is that it automatically groups all your mail into conversation view. Like, everything's a thread. You don't see an individual message for each reply. And for years, I mean, since Gmail launched, people have said, is there any way to turn that off?
I hate it.
They finally are launching a way. They're adding a setting where you can turn off conversation view. I was shocked by this because I felt like they just were so adamant about the fact that this was the way that you did email. But I feel like now they feel like 5 years has passed and people know, and now you have the choice.
See, this is one message, and now they're all stacked up. I can't figure it out. I don't understand it. It's too complicated. So how do I turn it off, Gina? Tell me.
So in your Gmail settings, this is a brand new setting. They're rolling this out over the next few days, so you might not have it yet. I actually don't have it yet. But in your settings, there is a conversation view, a brand new conversation view section, where you can say you can turn conversation view off, which means that when you look at your inbox, if you have a message with 12 replies, that will show up as 12 entries in your inbox. It won't be all grouped into one conversation. So it'll mean, you know, a lot of re or forward down your box. But some people prefer that.
That's how most mail clients work.
That's how most mail clients work. And at this point, I'm totally acclimated to the conversation view. They really kind of convinced me.
But it's
amazing that people are still real vocal about the fact that they don't want things grouped. And now you have the choice.
Just watch, because I'll turn it off and then I'll go, oh.
Yeah.
I now understand.
For new Gmail switchers like you, Leo, you do have the choice.
Exactly. I'm the one that's going, it confuses me. I'm easily confused, obviously. Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
I've got a number. Can I mention one thing first, if I just may real quickly, that a pioneering blogger named Hossein Darakhshan, otherwise known as Hoder, who variously was credited or not credited for helping start the incredible Iranian blogosphere, was sentenced to 19 and a half years in Iranian prison this week for things that he has said on his blog. And so it's one of us, folks. If you go to Ethan Zuckerman is suggesting that we pressure the Canadian government to pressure Iran. So I just wanted to mention that. Hoder is an odd duck. He changed his opinions a lot. He had some very strange opinions toward the end. But he's still a blogger who lack of free speech is in prison. So I just wanted to mention that. Now, the number. 1 million is the number, and I'll use it twice. One is that Google just announced that they are funding a company called Schwebe to the tune of $1 million for suspended plastic cycling pods on a monorail. That's useful, don't you think?
Schwebe!
Schwebe! Oh, there's the adolescent Leo comes out.
Yeah,
there, yes.
Oh, there you go. Oh, come on, tell me that's not the first thing.
It is. And so it's the damnedest thing. I can't imagine there'll be bicycle powered tracks that may be safer than the what's the thing the guy died on this week? The trolley. The oh Jesus, I'm being an idiot.
Segway. You know, the guy who drove his Segway off the cliff.
Segway off. So maybe this is safer than a Segway.
But now that must have been a suicide, right? I mean,
no, he bought the company. It was an accident.
It was an accident?
Yeah.
Not good for Segway sales.
Not good at all. He was testing the new one. Yeah, he went off the cliff. Yeah, oops.
I feel terrible laughing.
I didn't read it closely, and I thought, oh, well, he must have driven off the cliff. It was an accident?
Yeah, it was an accident.
He's a happy, nice guy who just bought the company, and then...
I'm so sorry. That's terrible.
Yeah. Well, but I'm just full of joy at the end of the show, aren't I?
How do you drive a Segway off a cliff?
I could do it.
I guess
I could probably do it too. I'm clumsy enough. I'd do it.
Oh, yeah. Don't go
near. Yeah, I guess if you just sped up too fast, or
don't go near cliffs on your Segway. Okay.
Oh, have you driven one, Gina?
I have not. I've actually managed
I could fall off a Segway. I'm like George Costanza.
I love the Segway.
Would be able to do it, Leo. But
yeah, Waz taught me how. So that's I got a lesson from a master. Okay. Yeah.
So the other use of 1 million real quick is that Vinod Khosla was at TechCrunch Disrupt and told a story that's been around, but he confirmed it, that Excite's George Bell rejected buying Google for $1 million. Khosla talked Larry and Sergey down to $750, and Excite still rejected that. Current market cap, $167 billion. Excite, dead.
And where's Krauss these days?
I think the aliens
got him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. He was the one who said something about aliens, right? Joe Krauss, the guy who started Excite. How much money?
$1 million and then talked out. I can't believe the Khosla was going to talk him down, but talked him down to $750,000 and Excite still rejected it. Too expensive.
Talked him down. I'll give you $49.95 and a hot dog. So my pick is something that Adam, is it Dacius? How do you say Adam's name? Dacius in Lifehacker?
That's a good question.
D-A-C-H-I-S, Dacius. Mm-hmm. Wrote about and promptly brought the site to its knees. But it's a great idea. It's called Rainmaker, and they have an announcement on their site. I went there immediately after I read the Lifehacker article to sign up, and all I got was an Apache error message every time I tried. Thank you for your interest in Rainmaker. We're experiencing very high traffic at the moment that is slowing our syncs. Trust that we are working around the clock to fix the issue. Well, if it gets fixed, this is a great idea. It ties all of your social networks into your Google contacts. So you can sign in. Let me just see if it's working now. Let me just sign in with my Gmail here. It is not cheap in the long run. Grant access. Okay. Now what I'll do is I'll give my Facebook and Twitter. Yeah.
Oh,
that's what I thought.
It's the price of fame.
It's the price of getting life hacked.
Yeah.
That's what it is. But it's a really great idea. Pulls your contact data from Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Combines, now my phone does a little bit of that, but this is a little bit smarter than the phone for doing this, and I'm very impressed. However, I gotta tell you, it is not without a price. If you look at the pricing, there is a free version, they call it Drizzle, that you get $10 per raindrop, $25 to start. Now
lock that metaphor.
Yeah, it's going well. It gets worse. If you pay $9, you get the sprinkle, and you get 100 raindrops a month. A shower is $250 a month for $20 a month, so it's a little pricey. But if you are basically, they call it CRM for Google Contacts, and I have to agree. If your contact list is really important to you, this is a very nice way of combining contacts from all of the social networks. Not updating them automatically, updating the phone numbers, updating birthdays. All the stuff that you need, who's connected to who. I think it's kind of a neat idea, and I look forward to it working someday. Just, I've probably now put another nail in the coffin of Rainmaker.
Yeah.
Don't try it now. No. Don't try it yet.
Yeah, the Rainmaker sysadmins are just like, oh, God.
Not again. Oh,
they're crying.
That was, by the way, one of the great moments from the Facebook movie when Zuckerberg said, "We never go down." And of course, last week, as I watched it, they went down.
Go down. Yeah. Yeah, he was mad at Eduardo because Eduardo closed the check. I know I shouldn't. Spoiler alert. But doesn't everybody know this? Maybe not. Anyway, I won't say it. The other thing that is a great moment for geeks is when they bring the Harvard network down.
Yeah.
And that's actually pretty neat. There's a couple of moments that you will like, Gina, like geek moments. Like when his buddy comes in and he's creating Face Smash, which predated Facebook. And was it Eduardo? Maybe it was Eduardo. He says, "Eduardo, what is the ELO rating algorithm that you were telling me about?" And he writes it in marker on the window, and then Zuck implements it into his system. And it's kind of cool. There's some geek coding moments that I liked.
All right. I'm going to see it. I'll let you know what
Tell us how wrong we were, Gina.
All right.
Say how great a movie it is. You know, this is nice, Jeff, to review a movie before it comes out because nobody can gainsay anything. You know, they don't.
Oh, they have been. They have
really
been.
Even without seeing it.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not a documentary, man.
No, that's true. It isn't. Not even close. We're going to let Gina and Jeff go because Gina has a date with a Fast Company. Fastcompany.com/worksmart for Gina's great new video feature on getting things done.
I'm off to do a shoot. But I'll be back for the full 90 minutes next year.
Yeah. That's next year, Freudian too, but next week. Slip if I ever heard one. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org and of course, as I said, fastcompany.com/worksmart. Jeff Jarvis, the author of What Would Google Do? He also blogs at buzzmachine.com, which is now back up. So you can read his pan of the Facebook movie. And we will end today. I'll let you guys go with, I don't think we'll play all 10 minutes, but the weirdest Google ad or what I don't know ever.
Pizza.
Google
Mobile.
I don't even know why.
Nearby without
I don't even know
location.
Why. Thanks everybody. We'll see you next time.
You're looking for
on Twitter.
Say you're in Chicago and you're really hungry. Pizza. See? I just got all the pizza places nearby. Your phone knows where you are. Pizza. Pizza. Pizza.
For 10 minutes.
Pizza.
I don't understand. What's happening here?
Pizza.
Why is he doing this?
Pizza. Pizza.
For 10
pizza
minutes.
Pizza. Pizza.
I actually feel sorry for the guy.
Yeah.
Pizza. Pizza.
Is this their response to the Bing pizza. Ad?
Maybe that's what it is. Schmidt pizza. Said today, Bing worries that maybe that's what it
pizza.
Is.
Pizza. Pizza.
I missed the dog the first time.
I like that.
Pizza. Pizza.
But I don't understand. I don't.
Pizza. Pizza.
They're saying this is a loop.
Pizza.
Maybe it is.
Pizza. Pizza. Pizza.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time on This pizza. Week in...
Pizza.
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 Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, pizza. Gina. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Pizza.